Welcome back to Maritime Morning. We were kind of surfing around and stumbled across a blog in the Huffington Post Living section just yesterday, which was quite interesting. Marnie Soupkopf is a one of the managing editors over there and wrote a blog called Change My Mind. Should there be an age limit for fertility treatments? Which sparked an interesting conversation, and we thought we would have it here. And I'll read a little bit of this to you, and then we'll introduce our guest. It says, how old is too old to be a new mother? The Ethics Committee of the American Society for Reproductive Medicine recently changed its policy to endorse providing donor eggs and embryos for transfer to women up to the age of 55. Is this a reasonable way of catching up with technology, which now makes parenthood possible for postmenopausal women? Does it go too far? Not far enough. And then two arguments were laid out for people to evaluate and make a determination of whether or not they agree with this position or they disagree with this position. One of the arguments was composed by Françoise Baylis. Dr. Baylis is the Canada Research Chair in Bioethics and Philosophy at Dalhousie University. She's appeared in this program to talk about reproductive ethics issues in the past, and we're delighted to have her back here this morning. Good morning, Dr. Baylis.
Good morning.
So I guess I've tried to boil this down into what I think is its simplest parts. Maybe you can correct me, but what it seems to be is that we are weighing whether or not the priority should be the rights of parents to have children when they choose, or whether or not public policy should lean towards what's in the best interest of the child. Is that a reasonable characterization of the discussion here?
I think that's a really accurate characterization of how the public hears the debate.
Mm-hmm.
But part of what I'm trying to do is I'm actually trying to start off by saying it's not just about the rights of women and the best interests of children, that we need to think about where you believe this right came from. What we really have is a strong desire, but a right? A right means that somebody has an obligation to provide me with something. That's just not clear to me that there is such a thing as a right to have a child once you're postmenopausal. I don't know where it comes from except that I want to claim it, right? So somebody out there wants to say they have a right, and you can use that language, but where do you think it comes from, and why do you think society has an obligation towards you to allow you to exercise that quote-unquote right?
Well, is this something that has emanated from the 1960s, 1970s, and the idea that women have absolute and total control over their bodies, and it should be a part of public policy?
Well, look, I totally defend the right to bodily integrity, but this is a separate issue. This is asking society to make available technology to overcome a natural limit in terms of biology. This is asking for a technological fix on aging. So this is not about bodily integrity. This is not about the right to control one's reproduction. I think it's a really separate issue. But let me step back a minute and say that one of the things that I think is really important to remember in this debate is this change has just been introduced in March of this year. And it's changing a policy that goes back to 1997. So the policy from 1997 to now of the same Ethics Committee of the American Society for Reproductive Medicine has been, and I quote, the physical and psychological risks involved with postmenopausal pregnancy are such that it should be discouraged. And what's interesting is when they change their mind and they say, okay, no, now we're going to encourage people between the ages of 50 and 54 to use this technology if they're postmenopausal, they say that the reason for this is we've got new data that's reassuring. And I want to say that data is not reassuring and that we should be thinking about the harms to these women who try to become pregnant at this time frame.
Well, public policy are decisions that are made that I guess are they're put in place in order to reduce harm or to provide protection. So who are we protecting here?
Well, you see, this is exactly the point. I don't actually think we're protecting anybody. I think what we're doing is we're giving in to this demand, to this strong desire to use a technology to overcome a natural limit on one's reproductive capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you some numbers that I think will probably be shocking to most people. If you're a woman between the ages of 15 to 45 and you're healthy and you become pregnant, you have a risk of 5 to 7% of pregnancy-induced hypertension. the risk for this, these women 50 to, and above is 35%. That's a huge increase. The risk of gestational diabetes in that same population of 15 to 45 is 3 to 4%. In this aged group, it's 20%. And here, the most shocking of all, the risk of cesarean section for women aged 15 to 45 is 27 to 28%. In this older group, it's 78%. So what's reassuring? I don't think that we're looking at the data through the lens of what's in the best interest of women, and that's both the women who are, you know, trying to become pregnant, but also the egg providers. Nobody's even talking about them.
But I guess this brings it around again from a public policy position, and I don't know how that differentiates itself from the ethics of it. But when we make a law or we create a regulation, that the regulation again comes down to protecting people. So are you saying that what we have to do is we have to look at protecting these women against against themselves or from themselves?
No, I think what I'm saying is we have to make sure that when we look at public policy, we look at it not in isolation. And I think that when we look at public policy, we have to look at the broad spectrum of issues and weigh everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that with this policy, what's happened is we haven't actually taken that big picture perspective. So if I were looking at this policy and thinking, what is it that we need to examine closely? We need to closely examine what are the harms to women over the age of 50 who are menopausal in becoming pregnant. And there are just some real physical harms to those women. Mm. Second of all, we need to look at the harms of the people that are going to be providing the eggs to these women. The problem with the postmenopausal woman is she doesn't have any eggs anymore. Well, these eggs aren't just sitting on the shelf, right? It's extremely onerous and risky to become an egg provider. We're not talking about the harms to those women. And then I think we need to look at the harms to children. And there's a reason, I think, why people raise the kinds of concerns that have been raised in the past, which have to do with whether or not older parents will have the physical and emotional energy, if you will, to deal with the demands of child rearing. I think people are also concerned about the higher risk that the older parent will die while the child is still young. And I think these are not really compensated for by the sorts of things we hear people say about, oh, well, the older parent will have greater resources, greater economic stability, greater personal maturity. These things are true, but I don't think they outweigh the harms that, you know, I've just identified. So, you know, big picture, harms to the women who would become pregnant, harms to the women who would become the egg providers, harms to the children. And what weighs against these harms? A strong desire to become a parent. And I'm just saying, I understand that strong desire. I'm not trying to minimize it. I'm just saying that in and of itself isn't enough reason to go forward.
Mm. So what kind of restrictions do you see being put in place in order to achieve what it is that you're suggesting here? Is it that publicly we don't fund this type of procedure, or that in fact what we do is we look at procedures like this, put limitations on them and enshrine them in law, and that somebody doing this is actually doing something outside of the law or that's illegal? Because if you don't, then surely private sector operators or, you know, other people are going to come in and fill the void where there is a demand.
Right. Well, I guess the situation in Canada is very complicated, and that's because this is actually an area of healthcare that is almost exclusively already in the private domain. Governments do not pay for assisted human reproduction except in the province of Quebec. And so I think already what you are looking at is what's happening in the private sector. Second of all, one of the things that's really important to appreciate is that these guidelines are guidelines from the United States, and they are just that. They're guidelines. So it's about telling practitioners what's reasonable. And I think that this is an area in which it would have been reasonable to say to practitioners, we don't advise you to treat this kind of patient for these kinds of reasons. There's harms to the women, there's harms to the egg providers, there's harms to the children. So that while we understand that, you know, some women would like to become pregnant after this. We don't think that technology should be used to pursue this goal for these reasons. And I think they're sound reasons.
The person who was arguing against you in this column was saying that they felt that there was no significant medical reason, no empirical evidence to demonstrate that older parents are any less fit than younger parents, and that it shouldn't be denied solely on the basis of age, because ageism is also something that we have to take into consideration here. So while you're saying it's not necessarily a right to have a medical intervention, by not providing it, are you not discriminating based on age? And is that not, I mean, inherently a difficult ground to start treading into?
I don't think so, and I actually don't think this is about ageism, because it's not as though we're looking at people and saying we're not going to give this technology to people who are, you know, having problems with respect to ovulation or ovaries or have medical reasons for being, you know, menopausal. I think what's happening here is we're saying that we're not going to provide a technology to overcome a natural phenomenon. We're not deciding that at a particular age a woman should not become a parent. We're saying your body no longer will allow you to do that, and we're not thinking it's appropriate to override that. That's a very different thing from walking around and saying, nope, as of this arbitrary cutoff, we're not going to allow you to become pregnant.
But I mean, isn't medicine by its nature overriding natural processes?
I think that in some cases it is, but I think in this particular case, what you need to do is to look at what's at issue in terms of implications for other people. And I think this is an area where there's an unwillingness to say the best interests of the child matter. One of the points I tried to raise in my column is to say, look, we should not look at technology in isolation from all of our other social policy. Mm-hmm. If we truly believe that this is a good thing for children, then why don't we allow women who are 50 to adopt? Why don't we allow women who are 55 to adopt a newborn? We don't do that. And maybe that's the policy that's wrong. Maybe that's where we have ageism, because there it's a situation whereby it's nothing to do with their body. And why should a woman who's 55 be forced to undergo this risky technology because as a society we won't let her adopt? So part of what I tried to say in my column is to say, look, what we really need to look at is what's good for children. If at the end of the day, you or anybody else out there can persuade me that it's good for children to be newborns in a family where the mother or the father are both 55 and above, then I want to say, that's great. If it's good for newborns, I want to do it. And if it's good for newborns, I don't want you forcing an older woman to have to use risky technology to have that baby. I want you to promote adoption. I want you to allow that 55-year-old woman to have that as a choice. Some women won't choose it, but some women might. So what I'm trying to say is, let's look at the real issue. The real issue is what's good for children. When we know what's good for children, let's make good social policy. And let's make sure that when we make good social policy, we make it for both technology and for non-technological approaches.
Dr. Bayliss, always great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Françoise Bayliss is the Canada Research Chair in Bioethics and Philosophy at Dalhousie University. And the question that we are posing here this morning in relation to what she was talking about is, should there be age limits for fertility treatments? How do you feel about it? 405-6000 or 877-801-8255. Do you think that anybody who of any age should be available, you know, within reason, I suppose, to have IVF or in vitro fertilization and be able to have a child, even at 55. This is what the Americans are saying. They've opened the door to people up to the age of 55 now being able to get pregnant, even postmenopausal women. Is that the right thing to do, or do you think it's the wrong thing to do? 405-6000 or 877-801-8255 is our number. That's 405-6000, 877-801-8255. We'll take a quick break. Love to hear your thoughts on this. This is Maritime Morning. Welcome back to Maritime Morning. The question that we just thrown out there this morning is whether or not there should be age limits on giving people in vitro fertilization. And the reason we're talking about it is that the Ethics Committee of the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, which acts as kind of the moral compass, if you will, for people who are doing this medicine, changed its policy to allow embryo transfer to women up until the age of 55. It used to be 52, and they moved it up to 55. And the reason for that was that There is data out there demonstrating that women between the ages of 50 and 54, the embryo transfer in pregnancy doesn't pose any sort of significant increase in health risks to the mother or the child compared to younger women. Now, over 55, it's a different story. There's, as we heard from our expert in this, hypertension, gestational diabetes, cesarean sections, all that sort of stuff. But there isn't really that sort of an increase among women that are 50 to 54, so they decided to make the change. But I guess the argument is being made there, really, why would we do that? Why would we make that as an option for women who are essentially postmenopausal? The view has always been that infertility is one of the natural characteristics of menopause, and to leave it at that, and that postmenopausal pregnancy should be discouraged. That's what they have always said, and now they're obviously changing this a little bit. There's a number of different jurisdictions in Canada, as it was argued by Sarah Cohen in this article that we were reading. She is a lawyer who deals with such things, that they've enacted legislation prohibiting the denial of services. That includes medical services to a person on the basis of age, along with race, gender, sexual orientation, marital status, and other things as well. So the denial of fertility services to a woman on the basis of age, she argues, falls squarely within the realm of age discrimination. It's one concern, but there's a lot of other discrimination issues that are relevant to the human rights codes and acts. For example, Ms. Cohen argues here, there are people who argue that it's in the best interest of children to be raised by heterosexual parents. There are others who argue that children perhaps should grow up in, it's detrimental for children who grow up in single-parent households because they're more stressed, have less time and attention to the child, and the child might have less access to financial and other resources. However, here in Canada, we've done away with a lot of that, and fertility services are now provided to heterosexual, same-sex, married, and single people alike. And her argument is, if we begin denying fertility services to someone who is 53 years old, you're effectively determining who may and who may not be a parent. And is that fair? 405-6000 is the number here, 877-801-8255. That's 405-6000 or 877-801-8255. Do you think we should be putting restrictions on the age that somebody can become a mother? I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. 405-6000 or 877-801-8255. The other angle on all of this is what's in the best interests of children. And, if we cast aside or put aside for a moment the rights of other people to have children, then you have to look at whether or not this is in their best interests as well. If you have a situation where a prospective mother is seeking access to in vitro fertilization, if she's 53, has a partner that's 65, there's a set of concerns that is that they are going to be too old to actually deal with a child, and how long are they going to actually have the child? I mean, I suppose the potential is they could live to be 100, but the likelihood is not the same as somebody who's younger, who's having a child as well. I'd like to hear your thoughts. 405-6000 or 1-877-801-8255. Morning, Diane. Do you think that we should be putting limits on when women should be afforded in vitro fertilization?
No, I don't believe so. I think between the government and society, everybody's telling women what to do with their bodies, and I think this should be something that is solely up to the decision of the woman. If she wants to move ahead and she knows the risks and she feels that the risks outweigh the benefit, I think it should be solely her decision to make that call, as well as discern finance, because to have this procedure done.
Nope, she's kind of breaking up there.
I'm paid sorry. For, I believe, in Quebec. or in Montreal, and so it's only going to affect people that have that certain income that can actually afford to move ahead with this procedure.
So you believe that this is there shouldn't be any sort of interference from a regulatory point of view of this at all, that it should be entirely up to the woman to choose when she decides that she's going to have the child. Do you think that there's an existing inequity between the way that women are treated in this and the way that men are treated?
I do. I just feel that right now it's everybody's trying to give their opinion on whether it's to do with abortion laws or moving ahead with fertility laws. I just think everybody needs to stay out of it and let the woman choose what's best for her. It's her body. Let her take those risks if that's what she's assuming. In the studies, nothing was said that it affects the fetus by having an older woman carry carry these eggs. So if it doesn't affect the medical condition outcome of the fetus, then I see no reason why someone should step in and tell a woman, no, you can't because you're over the age.
Okay, so in the same sense, do you believe that we should get rid of any restrictions on women or parents in terms of age in adopting children?
Most definitely. In our society right now, there's no age restriction to have children. There are people out there having multiple children by multiple partners who might not be growing up in a financial safe environment or a safe environment at all. There's no law to say you cannot have a child. Anyone can go out and have a child. So I don't know why, if someone is able to provide stability, a safe home, financial means, a better home, why they would put restrictions on someone doing adoption. That is absolutely the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. People are out there on social assistance, and there are no restrictions with how many children they're allowed to have. So why would there be restrictions on people that can financially afford children?
Thank you very much, Diane. I appreciate you taking the time to call up and voice your opinion on this. It's an interesting issue. One that we don't have time to talk about anymore. We have to get to a newscast in just a couple of minutes. Roger Haino is going to join us, and we're going to be talking about income tax. It is that time of year again, yes. You have to file by the end of the month, and we're going to deal with that. And then we're going to be talking about the situation in Korea. Apparently, the Americans have sent what they call a missile defense shield, or are sending it into the South China Sea. There's concerns over North Korea launching missiles with nuclear warheads on it. They're certainly doing a lot of saber rattling over there. We're going to try and get an understanding of how serious all of this is. Clearly, if the Americans are deploying that kind of technology, they're taking it seriously. We'll have a chat about that. That's coming up right after the news here on Maritime Morning.